it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to Sulfur Lines Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci, brought to you by Backwoods Home Magazine. Hey, Colorado, how you doing this week?
Good, good, man. How you been?
I'm doing okay. Just hanging in there. I mean, hoping for winter to get done.
How's the weather out there?
You know, I think it's we're just going to say it's permanently icy and cold. every day when I wake up, I'm waiting to see mastodons and things come walking across the front yard because the new ice age is coming.
Well, you know, I did wake up to snow this morning.
Oh, so you did?
Hopefully that makes you feel better. But, you know, being that we're in Colorado, 300 sunny days a year, it's already melted and gone.
Yeah, well, you know something? It is called winter for a reason. I just, you know, I guess I've just been so lucky since we moved up here with the real mild winters. And we've only had two good snowstorms. But, you know, it's just been so damn cold. And the cold isn't even so bad. It's the wind. You know, that wind comes ripping through here when it's, you know, below freezing. And just, man, it is just miserable to be outside.
Oh, man. I tell you, that is, that's rough.
Yeah. I can tell your heart's bleeding. I can tell. That's all right. No problem. No problem.
I warned you. I warned you.
No, you did. You did. I mean, you got to take the good with the bad, right? I guess.
Right.
I guess we should be happy that it's we're not in some sort of, you know, major heavy winter season where I'm out there shoveling snow 5 days a week. So
yeah.
I count my blessings where they are, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would.
So I just wanted to kind of throw out there for most people. I don't know if people knew, and I didn't see if you had it up on your Facebook. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's already passed, but I mean, it's been since the last show, so I wanted to make sure that I went out there and said, did you guys do anything exciting for your birthday?
You know, it's funny because we were going to, and I didn't. My wife's like, well, all morning you were working, and I, you know, it goes back to the old saying, I mean, do what you love, I guess, right?
Right, right.
And so I didn't feel like I was working, but she said I was working. But I took the afternoon off. The kids had some fun stuff going around, and so yeah, we enjoyed it. We went for a walk with the kids and enjoyed the afternoon. It was a beautiful day yesterday. So, and you know, oh, we also worked on my new car. So
oh, you did get one.
I got a car.
What'd you end up getting?
I ended up, it's not very self-reliant type of car, but it's a Lexus LS 400. So.
Okay, so you went and got a Lexus.
I did.
That doesn't seem to meet what you were looking for. What's the gas mileage on those puppies?
Actually, I have tested it out, and I've gotten 29, so not bad.
Oh, not bad at all. Okay, well, then that's not a bad thing.
No, it's a nice cruiser. I mean, it's, you know, it's totally loaded and super cush, but I mean, it was Lexus's flagship, so it's just like but if I'm going to drive instead of fly, I wanted something that was super comfortable. So yeah, this thing fits the bill.
And what year is it?
It's an older one. It's a 91.
Oh, well, still. I mean, those things retain their value, so that's not a big deal.
Oh yeah, you know, and I've watched several of them online with 350,000 miles and still look like they're, you know, only got 100,000 miles on them. So they seem to hold their longevity. So this one seems to be running good and ready to go, and I'm kind of gearing up for my trip next week. So I'm heading down to Dallas.
Oh, awesome! Well, I went ahead and broke down and bought a vehicle too.
Did you? What'd you buy?
Well, I took your advice and actually ended up test driving the new Ford Focuses, and ended up walking out with one.
Nice.
I mean, 40 miles to the gallon. I mean, I couldn't, you know, after I rode it and everything else, I was kind of like, wow, between the gas mileage and, you know, it wasn't, you know, it's not a high-end car, but for, you know, for Ford's lower-end model, you know, in their fleet, it's a comfortable car. And so, yeah, I just decided, you know, the gas mileage was too good, of a deal to pass up, so I went ahead and got one.
Good, good.
Yeah, got a whole 11 miles on it so far.
Yeah. Well, good. You know, that's a great car, though. I mean, honestly, they really do run really well. And again, 40 miles to the gallon, you'll probably get, you know, anywhere between 37 and 40. And they seem to do what they need to do. So I know several of them with 200,000 miles are still trucking. So
yeah, well, and you know. Since this car was specifically purchased for the job and the drive back and forth every other week, and it's almost going to be completely highway driving. I mean, I literally drove from the dealer and parked it and put it away, and then when I leave this Sunday for my trip, I'll drive it out there, and then when I come back for the next week and not have to go for a week, it'll go right back into the garage and park it. So it's 100% only for that. So I'm hoping I get. It'd be nice if I could get like 37 to 40 out of it.
Did it come with that new Ford, entertainment thing where it links to your phone and all that stuff?
Oh, the sync system. Yeah, that's the standard feature.
Nice.
I did like, you know, the first thing they did when I got there, you know, compared to the Chevy dealer, which I had a problem with, the Ford dealer was on the ball. They had me in and out. I said, look, I've test drove a lot of cars. I just want to test drive it and see if it's comfortable, and then let's go through the details. So we did, and I was able to negotiate them down about almost $5,000 less than they were asking than the original price. And they go, okay. When we were all done, they had me through the paperwork and completely done in about 35 minutes, which is like a record. I've never been out of a car dealer in that short a period of time. Then they had me out in the back. They detailed the car just before it went out, which I laughed because it was completely worthless. Because as soon as I drove out, it was icy and sleety, and so I didn't even get out of the driveway before the entire back of the car looked like I'd driven through a mud pit. As they were detailing it and you know, cleaning the outside up and wiping everything up, I just kind of looked at it and started laughing. They said, "Well, what's so funny?" And I said, "Well, you guys are doing all this extra work, and you have to know that as soon as I go out those double doors right there, it's going to be a mess." And they're like, "Yeah, but we have to do it." But they do. They took it and they took my BlackBerry. They sunk it, you know, to make sure all that was done. You know, they went through all the controls and everything else. By the time I walked out of there, it was 100% set up, and it was nice. So I'm happy.
Good, good. I'm glad. I hope it lives up to my recommendation.
Well, I think, you know, again, I think it will. I mean, I wasn't looking for a really high-end car because this is basically just a driver. And I was amazed because, you know, my wife had a Ford Focus probably 8 years ago. And they were a little tinny back then.
Yep. Yep.
And I was amazed when I got inside this thing and drove it. The seats were very comfortable, and I didn't have all the road noise that I thought I was going to have remembering her vehicle. And they've really done a good job with these cars. I mean, I got the sedan version as opposed to the hatchback.
Okay.
Which, since no one's going to sit in the back seat, it kind of gave me a little bit more leg room and a little bit more room to be inside it. So.
Gotcha. You know, yeah, they've really stepped up. I'm very impressed. You know, again, I'm impressed with Ford and what they've done with their cars in the last few years.
Yeah, and it was really one of the things they pointed out when you were there is there's a sticker in the rear window, actually the driver's side back seat window, you know, for the passenger. And it has a big sticker there that says this car was manufactured and put together in Michigan. And I kind of got a kick out of that since that's where I'm working is Michigan. But they were so proud of it. I mean, four or five times was we went around the car and they would go point back and go, "And this car was completely put together in Michigan."
Nice.
And I said, "Well, I go, you're basically trying to sell the point that it's still an American-made car. And he said, and then he threw out what you did, which I thought was a great sales thing, and he said, and we did it without government assistance.
Nice.
I was like,
bam!
For you. If that didn't get me signing on the dotted line, I was waiting for the flags to drop down and for Yankee Doodle Dandy to become playing the speaker system and all that other stuff. But it was just like, wow. And I told the guy when I was signing, I was like, that was a good sales pitch. I go, you know, the Michigan thing, you know, after you did it a couple of times, I was kind of like, yeah, whatever. But then when you closed it by saying, and our company did it without any government assistance, I said, at that point, I was sold.
Yeah, nice. Good for Ford.
Yeah, and short of, and actually, they've really updated their warranty, too. It's like 3 years, 36,000 mile bumper to bumper.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's pretty decent too. A lot of them are still 224, and you pay for more.
Oh,
unless you get to the upper model of cars, and then they do 336.
Okay. But, did you do 336, or did they give you an option to go to the 100,000?
Well, I'm not going to keep the car that long.
Oh, okay.
My goal for this is to probably, again. So people don't think, oh my God, look how much money, he must have a lot of money. You know, this was a sub 20 car. I mean, significantly sub 20 by the time I was done. And the goal, and I was spending $16,000 a year on rental cars.
Oh,
yeah. So our goal here is to run it for a year to a year and a half, keep it sub 50,000 miles. I mean, hopefully sub 30,000 miles. On the car, and then trade it in and get another one. And with the money that we get back on this one, we sat down with them and we figured, if I turn it in next year, after about a year and a half of owning it, and I can keep it at below 36,000 miles, so there's still some warranty left, I'll get about 60% of the value back in trade-in. And so that means each year I'm only paying about $5,000 for a new car.
Gotcha. Which is a lot less than your rental car fee that you've been...
A ton less than rental car fees, and every time I redo a new one, even though I'm paying $5,000, but I'm getting another 3-year 36,000 bumper to bumper.
Nice.
And so it didn't make sense. You know, they charge you $1,700 or $1,500 for the bigger warranty, and it was kind of like, well, that's half the price I'm going to be paying on a new car, so it just, the math didn't work out, so...
Okay. Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoy the car.
Well, I mean, I'll know after my first big drive here. We were joking around. It's like, well, I guess we'll know in a week. I mean, I'll either have buyer's remorse after being in the car for 12 hours, or I'll, or I'll be saying, wow, that was a good investment. So.
Well, good. I'll be curious to find out after the trip.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you know for sure.
Okay.
So, last week, we started with Charles Sanders, and we started our whole, getting ready for spring. And we're going to follow that trend today. And we are going to talk to the always wonderful, always very knowledgeable Jackie Clay. And
awesome.
I can't wait to hear. I mean, this woman is always go, 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 go.
She is.
I'm dying to hear what she does to get ready for all her spring chores, because that woman's got a lot on her plate.
She does.
I think when we talked to her last time, didn't she say that they just bought the adjoining piece of property and they were cleaning that one up?
I believe so. Yeah.
So I can't imagine that she has a lot of time to sit on her laurels and do that stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. And then how about, do we have any updates on the Self-Reliance Expo? Last week you mentioned that we have a new title sponsor.
We do. Again. Yeah, Daily Bread. Daily Bread's now our new title sponsor. And if you have not, go to selfrelianceexpo.com and sign up. They're giving away, for each event we're doing this year, they're giving away 90-day supply of food storage. So,
awesome.
it's awesome. It's a great 90-day basic meal plan that they're giving away. 25-year worry-free food storage shelf life. So yeah, please go to SelfRelianceExpo.com and sign up for that. We're excited to have our new title sponsor.
Yeah, Daily Bread. Awesome. And did you just give the URL? What's their URL? Is it just www.dailybread.com?
Uh-huh, dailybread.com. You can go there. So if after you sign up for for the potential to win, you can go to dailybread.com and you give them your name and your mailing address, and they'll actually mail you a sample of their product.
Really? Well, that's kind of cool.
Yep.
Is it the lasagna? Because I like the
lasagna. I believe you get to pick.
Ooh. Guys, get the lasagna. Their lasagna rocks.
It was good. Yeah.
It's made with real meat.
It was good.
Yeah, not this dehydrated stuff. So just to kind of cover, just to make sure we go over everything, Backwoods Home Magazine should be having their issue 140 coming out here, I'd say in the next 2-3 weeks, because we're mid-February now, right?
Right. So if you guys don't have your subscription to Backwoods Home Magazine, that's the other one. You need to go to Backwoods Home Magazine and get that subscription. That is money well spent, I promise you.
Yeah, and that's www.backwoodshome.com. And, you can still currently get issue 139, which is the bok, bok, bok chicken issue. But that was my chicken
yeah,
impersonation.
It was bad. Yeah,
I know. But actually, guys, I wasn't making that up. That's actually the name of the issue, the bok, bok, bok chicken issue. The impression was all me, but the title is all them.
I'm sure they understood that.
Okay. But it's a great issue. I'm a chicken guy. You know, we did our chickens this year, and I have to tell you, I still read stuff in here that I hadn't really thought about. And one of the things that we haven't tried, but because we didn't raise meat chickens, our chickens are for eggs. I read the entire article by Linda, I think it's Gabris, and I apologize, Linda, if that's not your last name. But she wrote an article on how to can chicken, and it seems real simple. Your wife does cans meats, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. She did. Matter of fact, she just did canned pork loin, so that was awesome. So good.
Yeah, I've been afraid to do it because, my canned vegetables the first time didn't come out all that great. So I'm afraid I'd kill myself and my family if I did canned meat. So I swear we're gonna do it this year, and then we're gonna the neighbors I don't like next door are gonna sample it, and I'll tell you if I did it right.
There you go.
There you go. That's the way you do it. It's like you bring them a present, you bring them a basket full of jars and say, I know we've got off on the wrong foot, but here you go. And if they're still walking around at the end of the week, you know you did it right.
Yep. And if they didn't, you got rid of a neighbor you didn't like.
That's right. then that property's up for sale, and I'll get it at a discounted price.
Jeez.
All right. Well, we should probably give Jackie a call. So let's go ahead and take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we will try giving Jackie Clay a phone call and talk to her about her tips and tricks. How's that sound?
Let's do it.
All right.
If everything you eat comes out of boxes stored in your freezer, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo. If you're afraid to take out your own garbage because the neighbor kids might beat you up, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
Over 50 training classes are coming to the Self-Reliance Expo. This family-friendly event focuses on traditional values and long-forgotten skills. Gardening, alternative home building, off-grid living, food preservation, cooking with the sun, self-defense classes, canine demos, and more.
If you can kill a houseplant just by looking at it, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
The Self-Reliance Expo is fun for the whole family and is the largest of its kind in the nation. Learn how to do it yourself. Learn how to defend yourself. Save money. Save a life.
If the only screwdriver you own is made of orange juice and vodka, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
It's the Self-Reliance Expo, coming soon. Find out more by going to SelfRelianceExpo.com. That's SelfRelianceExpo.com.
All right, guys, you're back with Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci, and you're listening to Self-Reliance Exposed, brought to you every week by Backwoods Home Magazine. All right, Colorado, let's see what we can do here and giving good old Jackie a call. Now, I always this is horrible because we've talked to her so many times. She from Minnesota or Montana?
Minnesota.
It is Minnesota. I thought it was.
Yep.
I was looking through all my old show notes and everything else, and I was like, I don't have it written here, and I'd hate to say something that was wrong. And hopefully she didn't tell me what number to call, so we're going to try her on her cell phone and see what ends up happening. I haven't looked at the weather. I wonder what it's been like up there. It's got to be damn cold up in Minnesota.
Oh, I'm sure.
Hello?
Jackie, this is Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. You're on the radio. How are you today?
Hi there, Ron. I'm
Hi.
Fine. Hi.
How you been?
Oh, we're fighting winter. We had a late winter, but now it's really getting us.
I bet. I can't imagine. I imagine you guys are getting hammered up there.
Yeah, we've been getting like a foot and a half a week anyway, and the skivvy here is that we got 32 inches of snow coming our way.
So are you getting hit by that storm that's going to – it was supposed to hit us in Iowa, but they said it was going to come down and blow east. So you're going to get a piece of that storm that's heading to the East Coast?
I think it's another one coming out of the Rockies. It's coming in Sunday.
Oh, geez. I guess I need to check the weather report. See if we're
we heard it first thing this morning. It was on the weather radio, and then all of a sudden it disappeared. they didn't mention it again.
Oh, you're right. It looks like we're going to get a piece of it. Oh, geez.
That's what I thought.
Oh, Jackie, I was all so excited to talk to you, and now I'm all depressed.
Well, I don't have a reputation for being doom and gloom, so think of it as all that moisture we're going to get that's going to help the drought this spring.
Oh, there you go. I guess I could look at this. We were just starting to warm up and to get into the high 30s, just lightly above freezing, and now it's showing it's going to drop back into the teens again. So I guess that's the way it works, right?
You get what you get. That's the way life is.
That's true.
That's true.
So, you know, what we've been trying to do, Jackie, is, you know, we had a show about a month ago, and after the end of the show, I got a bunch of emails in and people saying that every year they get so overwhelmed when spring comes in that they never get 50% of the things that they want to get done. And Colorado Ron and I talked, and we decided that we were going to start pulling people in and talking about the things that people can do when winter's still going on to get ready for spring. Because having talked to you before and talked to other people, you really don't wait for spring to get here to get to do everything. Because that's just that you're never going to get anything done at that point. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, you get burned out. You get overwhelmed. We start getting ready for spring in the winter, and we start getting ready for winter in the winter. We get ready for the next winter when winter's still hitting us this year.
Yeah, and
Go
ahead.
We try to think of things that are really a pain this year, and what can we do to make them nicer for next winter, in the same like summertime or spring. Try to think of the things that really, you know, were hard and, you know, start preparing for them in the wintertime.
And that makes a lot of sense. Now, Colorado Ron and I were talking right before you came back, and we both seem to remember, didn't you just get purchase the property right next door to you?
Yes, we did, the 40 acres.
40 acres, okay. So... You've now increased the size of your spread significantly. I mean, to me, I always feel like I've already got more than enough to do. That would seem like you really have to plan what you're going to do in spring, probably even more to be able to accomplish everything you probably need to do on such a large piece of property.
Well, the one thing that everybody needs to think about is no matter what you do, you're never going to get it all done. And not lose track of the big picture there. You know, if you don't get it all done, oh, well, that's life. But kind of make a mental list of priorities, things that you really need to do. And like, we want to plant some hayseed on some of the land that Will cleared last year on that 40 acres. And so he went in there and he piled brush and stumps and stuff like that. And during the winter, he's been burning all those piles. So in the spring, there's going to be potash to spread around, and then it'll be ready to plant. And if he would have waited until spring to burn those piles, he would have really gotten overwhelmed with that project.
Yeah, yeah, that's a big project. How many acres are you burning there or clearing?
Well, there's about 12 acres that he's cleared with the bulldozer, and then he saved all of the trees. It's mostly small popple trees, and he saved every single one that was, you know, 2 inches and bigger, and limbed them and brought them in and stacked them up. We've got about probably 4 cords of that little bitty wood, and a lot of people say, well, what are you going through all that work for? Well, that is perfect for my kitchen stove. And it's perfect for our wood-burning stock tank heaters that we use to heat the livestock tanks all winter. Because we're off-grid, we can't just pop an electric stock tank heater in there to keep water flowing. But he's built these wood-burning stock tank heaters, and that wood that everybody said, what are you bothering with that stuff for, is cut up, and it keeps our horses drinking all winter and the cows.
Interesting. Now, the it sure seems like that's a pretty monumental task there. I mean, it seems like it'd take quite a bit of time there. How long did it take you guys to get all that cleared out?
Well, we've got a little 10-10 dozer, and last winter he went in there and started it and sheared off all the willow brush and pushed up the trees, the popple, little popple trees just have shallow roots. And so he'd push them up out of the ground. Then after he had a bunch done, he'd go with a chainsaw and cut them down, throw them in a pile. And actually, it really probably only took maybe 4 weeks in the wintertime and then another 4 weeks in the summertime. And then last fall, he hit it again to start burning. So it wasn't all at one time. It's like when we make firewood,
uh-huh.
You know, to heat the house. We don't do it like, say, well, today we're going to make firewood and split and cut 5 cords or something. We just plug away at a little bit at a time until we have the woodshed full. You know, we start in the spring cutting our firewood, and a lot of people don't do that until fall. But almost all of our big projects on the homestead are done a little bit at a time, so it doesn't overwhelm us. And I think that's where a lot of people just get knocked dead. They go, well, today I'm going to plant the garden.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, my God. it takes me 2 weeks to plant my garden, and then I've still got spots I need to fix.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you do it all at once, you feel like you're drowning.
No, I agree with that 100%. I have a question for you. You mentioned the cutting of the wood, and this brought up a question for me. You know, here, you know, I live in a neighborhood, but I also have a wood-burning fireplace, and I try to keep a winter supply of wood on hand for an emergency so that I can heat my home. But I don't necessarily use that wood all winter. How long will that wood last before it starts to just become too rotten and I just need to either burn it or throw it away? Do you have any idea?
If you can put it under any kind of protection so it's not getting wet, it'll last for years and years and years.
Okay.
And it just gets better and better, unless it has insect infestation or something. But usually, you know, like we usually try to keep two years worth of wood in the woodshed.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we've got other stacks outside and whatever, but if you can get it under a roof, the wood's lifetime is probably 10 times or better, greater than it is if you've just thrown it in a pile in the yard.
Okay, well, that's my next project then. I got to get a roof on that thing because I don't want to have to burn the wood just because, you know, it's going rotten.
Yeah, and seasoned wood always burns more efficiently.
Right. A lot of people think that if they cut their wood in the summertime from green trees and then block it up and then split it in the fall, that that wood is going to be real good and seasoned. And that's really wrong. It takes at least 2 years for, if you cut a green tree down, it's not seasoned for 2 years to get 100% BTUs out of that that you would. Because even year-old wood has still got a little bit of dampness, a little sap. You can even hear it hiss and pop when it's in the stove. So to get the maximum heating out of it, it should be 2 years old. And that's cut and split. Because just cut into rounds does not season that wood.
Okay. Yep. So I'm. That is my project. that's my summer project. Get a roof on that stuff. So now, as far as the other thing that you talked about, which was very interesting, is breaking things up so that you're not overwhelmed. And I completely 100% agree with that. But at the same time, it's kind of hard. A lot of us, we still have a job during the day, so when we get home, we're trying to, play catch up on some of these things. Do you just do a task list, or do you just go outside and decide this is what I'm doing today, or how do you do it?
It's just a mental task list. It's a priority list. What really, really, really has to be done? And I don't necessarily, and usually, don't finish that task that day unless it's something that, you must vaccinate the goats today. You must worm the cattle today. You must, there's always something you must do. But most things, it's a high priority, but you don't absolutely have to get it done today. If you wait till tomorrow and finish it, your brain's not going to fall out on the floor.
Yeah. So we
set too many deadlines for ourselves.
Yes.
We've learned that from homesteading for years and years and years, and it takes the fun out of it. If you work yourself to the point where it's not fun anymore, that is not a good thing.
No, and I agree, because then it's just a big job, and you grow to hate it. So
right. That's
definitely not something we want. Now, I believe last time we talked, you were doing it's kind of a continuing project is your home. You had done some additions and things like that. Have you guys done anything recently, or has it been just too tough with the winter? Or
no, because when it's a tough winter, then we work inside on all of the unfinished little projects. We added a four-season greenhouse on the south side of the house, and the existing roof of the log cabin comes down into the greenhouse, and we never put shingles on it because we knew that we were going to eventually put hand-split cedar shakes on it just for the decorative value. And so it had ice and water shield, which looks like tar paper, black tar paper, and that was it. And so for several years we've been looking at that going, ooh, that looks like heck. So Will had a friend that was over that's into knife making, and he made Will a nice knife. And Will said, gee, that's almost like a frull. And he had some cedar blocks out here that were left over from fence posts. They were the big fence posts that were too big to use on the fence line. So he tapped those down into those cedar blocks and split off some really nice cedar shakes. And we commenced to roof that little ugly roof. After about a week's worth of doing that, we got that done. He put on the window trim on all the log windows in the house. So we're just playing finish up.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty slick. Now, that greenhouse, how did that turn out? Are you still able to use it right now in the dead of winter?
Oh, well, yes, we can, but right now we're not, because we knew we had a lot of catch up, finish up stuff in the house. And so we didn't have anything going, but the end of the month I'll be starting my peppers and some other long growing things, petunias that I use for hanging baskets and stuff. So at the end of February, I start all that stuff, and so she'll be going 100%. Usually we have some potted plants that we use for all winter in there, you know, peppers and tomatoes, and we'll even have green beans growing.
Nice.
Whole beans in there.
You know, I had I had some lemon and lime trees here, and I was so excited because I got my first lemon trees, or my first lemons from the trees this year. And, you know, I've been caring for them for a while and paying attention to them, and then I forgot about them, and I think I killed them because they're just... I forgot to water them, and I was out of town for like a couple of weeks, and anyway, it was bad, and so they're not looking pretty healthy here. I'm hoping I can save them, but it would be awesome to have a greenhouse where I could put them in there in the winter time.
We want to get some citrus because obviously in northern Minnesota we can't grow citrus. We want to put just like a few potted ones in, you know. We've got magnificent plans for the house here. But there again, you know, it's priorities. We have to do this first in order to do that, you know. So.
I hear you. Now, this is pretty much, you don't work outside of the homestead, right? Other than articles?
No.
Okay. So that's a pretty full-time gig for you.
Yeah, it is. And when Will and I first got together, we had some very intense discussions about him working off the homestead because he'd always supported the family and he's always worked out. And so we had some very intense discussions because I know how hard it is when you work off of the homestead because I have in the past. And you come home and you just can't get as much done. You know, you're just too tired. And I said, you know, I can make enough writing that, you know, to support what we do. And if you can work on the homestead, we'll be so much farther ahead. And so he said, well, I'll try it for 6 months, see how it goes. And it absolutely worked out perfect.
Awesome.
Because, you know, he's built things and done things that if he was working out, we'd be years down the road. You can still get it all done, but it just takes so much longer.
You know, that's interesting that you said that because, you know, a lot of us, you know, obviously work off outside, you know, the home and then try to get things done in the evening. Most of us need to do that to pay for the house. But, if somebody was to go and buy some property and just start from scratch and pay for the property, pay cash for it, and just start from scratch, it would still take a while, though, to start accumulating enough to actually make some money back, I would think, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's selling chickens or rabbits or, you know, your fruit and vegetables or whatever you might be selling to barter and trade and things like that, it would still seem like you need some sort of outside source. Like you have your writing. So, I mean, it seems like you would still need some sort of outside source of income.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to just move on to a new homestead and make money off of it in order to support your lifestyle. You know, even if you live a very, very simplistic lifestyle, there's still things you're going to need money for, you know, buying feed, paying your taxes, you know, gas for a vehicle, whatever, gas for your rotor tiller and chainsaw. You know, you can certainly barter a lot of things, you know, trade work with a neighbor or whatever, but there is a certain amount of money that you're going to have. And, you know, whether one person in a couple works out, or if you both work part-time off the place, or if one of you has a skill that you can do on the homestead, you know, those all are real good options.
You know, one of the skills that I've looked at, I've always wanted to develop, and I never have, and I've been kind of curious about it, and I'm thinking about getting into it, is blacksmithing. Have you ever done anything like that?
Will has? Yeah, he can make anything out of iron. You give him a piece of steel and he'll make something out of it. He took when we decided that we liked what Eric's knife was doing with our shakes, Will had an old truck spring, a broken truck spring, laying out here in the driveway on his workbench area. And he went out there and heated that up. And about 2 hours later, he had a furrow. And with that furrow, he split all of our shingles.
Wow.
You know, our friend Eric makes knives. You know, there's all kinds of possibilities. A lot of people make a good living making decorative iron works, you know, hooks and you know, towel racks and things like that for the home, you know, upscale stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that you're right. You know, that's something that's always been a kind of a fascination with me, and I've always wanted to just pound some heated metal. And so, you would think at the end of the day, you just have no worries or no stress whatsoever because you just beat on the iron all day.
So. Hey, the same thing works for working in the garden. You pull enough weeds and beat enough dirt off those weeds. You're too tired to be mad.
That's right. That's right. Now, I have a question for you, Jackie. What is some of your, you know, everybody has chores that you just don't like, you know? And, you know, it's funny because the ones that I hate, my wife doesn't mind. And the ones that my wife hates, I don't mind. So I'm just kind of curious. Do you have some chores that you just can't stand, and if you could pass it off to somebody else, you would?
Actually, no.
Oh.
Will, I'm sorry. Both Will and I just love everything we're doing. My least favorite chore is in the wintertime lugging buckets of water to all the different pens.
Oh, yeah.
And we're building I shouldn't say we. Will is building a real nice two-story barn down next to our pasture. And when we get that done, we won't have to lug buckets of water to all these different pens because the water line is down in the barn, and it'll just be running a hose from one pen to another to another. So it won't be lugging water that spills on your pant leg and freezes solid.
Wow. How cold does it get there?
Well, we've had 35 below a couple, three times this winter.
Oh, my goodness.
I've seen it 55 below, so.
55 below. Holy moly. That's like, don't walk outside after a shower with your wet hair because it'd be frozen.
Well, it freezes solid. Yeah,
oh,
it does.
Man.
And when it's 35 below, your breath freezes ahead of you and makes a little snowstorm. It's kind of cute, actually.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
So, hey, do you mind if I jump in, Colorado?
Yeah, go for it.
Hey, Jackie. So, I had a question, which is, you know, one of the things you're known best for, you're known well for a lot of things, but is the canning and all the stuff that you do with your canning. So, you know, are there things that you do, like, now to make sure that you're ready for the canning season and everything else? It just seems like there's so much that you could possibly do. I don't know if there's anything that people can start doing now. I know that one of the things I started looking at was making purchases because throughout the winter I found that there was a lot of stuff that was on clearance the last couple of months, you know, because they were trying to make shelf space for, you know, for Christmas and then after Christmas just trying to get rid of things. And things were a lot less expensive.
Yeah, I never buy, well, I shouldn't say never, but I very seldom buy anything at full price. I really watch the sales. Like you say, after canning season, what most people consider canning season is in the late summer, early fall. A lot of stores sell out their canning jars and other supplies at a real good sale. I know this fall Menards was selling out cases of pint jars for $4 a case, and I didn't get in on that one, but our friend Tom came in, and he said, I just bought a truckload of canning jars. So, yeah, you can certainly do that. But for me, canning season never ends. There's always something to can, and so I kind of keep my hands in all year round. Right now I'm canning some winter squash. I saved the seeds for it, and it's a big squash, and I don't want to waste it. So I'm cutting it up and putting it in pint jars and that'll be our pumpkin pies for the next, you know, whenever. But when you don't stop canning, you're always thinking about it. So, you know, if you've got a little extra cash, one thing that's worked for me is all winter, I'll pick, every time I go to the store, I'll pick up a dozen or two dozen canning jar lids or maybe a case of jars. It's just stocking up. And, you know, it doesn't hurt you to spend a couple bucks here and a couple bucks there instead of coming to canning your tomatoes and going, oh, my God, I don't have enough jars. And you can bet that the prices will be really high again.
Right. And that was a pretty good impersonation. That's exactly what I sound like when I get to the store. The high pitch.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, the high pitch whine was exactly perfect. So, well, I mean, and it's a, that's a good point about how, you know, and I think Ron's wife is probably the same way, that they never really stop canning, but it seemed like right now is a good time to store up, because the other thing is that it would seem like everybody kind of rushes at the last second. I know that when my sister-in-laws and everything else talk about canning, it's like, oh, we couldn't find XYZ this week.
Yeah.
And it just seems like right now would be the perfect opportunity to start prepping for that. And also maybe planning what you're thinking that you're going to plant that year, so then knowing exactly what you're going to need for canning.
Right.
There's all kinds of materials.
Let me jump in there right now. I've been doing a little bit of study on things, and with the economy, we had a terrible nationwide drought last year, and it isn't improving. And they say that the price of food this coming summer is going to be horrible. The price of meat is going to be horrible. So, you know, I would advise everybody who possibly can to get a garden in and plant as much garden as you can.
So on that note, I mean, there's a lot to do to get prepared for a big garden. And I don't know, if you were coming out to my house and I'm a complete novice and I'm starting from square one, what can I start doing now to get prepared? I mean, at least in my neck of the woods, I'm not quite as far north as you are. But, you know, my ground's frozen, so it's not like I can start, you know, tilling the ground and everything else to get it prepared. But there's got to be things I can do to go ahead and start getting ready, so when things start thawing and spring hits here, I can jump on.
Yeah, you bet you can. Most people don't have the garden fenced against deer and other real bad predators that are going to eat your food. And what Will and I do is all winter, every time we go to town, we'll buy one bundle of steel fence posts, you know, 8-foot steel fence posts, and or some fencing wire, some 6-foot, 2x4-inch welded fencing wire, you know, whatever we can afford at the time towards fencing our garden, our berry patch, our orchard. And we've got all of them fenced now. But we're going to add some more fencing to our house yard because our innovative deer have decided they can climb underneath of our deck and then get in the garden. So we're going to have to do a little more fencing. You wouldn't think a deer would go through your front yard, get down on their hands and no, deers don't have hands and knees. Okay, they get down on their knees and crawl like ninja warriors under my deck. So they can get down and eat dead corn stalks, but they certainly do.
Okay.
So another thing, everybody is probably getting seed catalogs now, and it's a really, really good idea to sit down and study those seed catalogs for the varieties that you want to plant, because if you can raise your own tomatoes, peppers, some of the things you start indoors, you're going to save a lot of money and have a huge variety of choices of what you want to plant, because don't depend on the stores and the garden centers to have the best varieties for your garden, because they buy the cheapest, most popular ones, period. And they may not make good tomatoes. They may not make nice peppers in your climate or ever. I mean, like Early Girl tomatoes is my favorite one. You know, every garden store in the country, I think, has Early Girl tomatoes. And to me, they're the most tasteless, nasty, unproductive tomatoes there are.
Wow.
And expensive.
Okay. Well, and then, you know, also, people should also be paying attention to their, you know, to when their planting season is, correct? Because, you know, every fruit and vegetable has a zone. You know, you live in a specific zone, like I live in, I think, zone 5. And so you have to adjust a little bit. Some people plant certain things a little bit earlier, and some people plant them later in the season to get the best yield, correct?
Certainly. You know, the farther south you are, obviously you're going to be planting earlier. When we lived in New Mexico, you would think we could plant earlier, but we were on the high plains at 6,000 feet. And we actually didn't have frost-free days until June. And you think, well, New Mexico, you should be able to plant pretty much year-round, but there's the altitude consideration, too. So it really pays to know your own microclimate, because if you're at an altitude, if you're next to the ocean, if you're next to one of the Great Lakes, there's a lot of different considerations there.
Now, what is your opinion? You talked about, and it's kind of funny you said that, because I went to the mailbox yesterday and had 4 different seed catalogs that hit me all the same day. Yeah, so obviously all the different companies are just sending them out. And, you know, I've always wondered if it made sense and how much you know better the potential of my yield was going to be if I purchased my seeds and everything now and started them either in the house or in a small greenhouse. I mean, do you do that? And would you recommend to our audience that they, you know, pick some of these things and start them up?
Most definitely, because you can get the varieties that will do the best in your climate through these seed catalogs. You need to study it a little bit. It's really important to your family, not just to say, well, I'm going to plant a dozen tomatoes. You know, pick ones that are going to be very productive in your climate. If you're in a warmer climate, you know, Alabama, Tennessee, you're going to want a tomato that can take the heat. If you're up north, you're going to want a tomato that can take some cold. You know, all tomatoes are frost sensitive. They'll freeze if it gets to be 32 degrees. But some will set fruit at 50 degrees and some won't. Some will set fruit at 80 degrees and some won't. So you need to study the different varieties and pick one that's going to do well for you. Ask your neighbors what varieties, you know, not neighbors that buy them at the garden center, but neighbors that really are in the know. And another thing to consider, too, is plant some heritage open-pollinated varieties and start saving some of your own seed. Because I was horrified this year, a lot of the seed packages in some of these seed catalogs are like $5.50, $6.50 for like 10, 20 seeds. And that's horrible. You know, I've started saving a lot more seeds than I used to. You know, as long as they're an open pollinated, not a hybrid.
And I was just going to ask you, I mean, I noticed in this year's catalog, and I'm not sure why, they seem to be highlighting the hybrid blends. And then at first I was very confused. And then I think it goes back to a comment that you made earlier, which is the drought. Almost all of them have these giant little signs on there that says highly drought resistant, better water management. I'm actually looking at them while I'm talking to you. And so, you know, so where last year at this time of year, the seed catalogs I was getting in really were promoting non-hybrid heritage seeds. And I think that everybody's scared because last season across the nation was so dry and so bad. I know everybody in my family, it was remarkable. It's just, gardens were pathetic. And
yeah.
And so this year they seem to really be promoting all these hybrids that are drought resistant, you know, water efficient hybrids.
Trust me, don't believe everything you read. A lot of it is a marketing ploy. You've got to use a little common sense there, because tomatoes need water, peppers need water, watermelons need water. Beans and corn will take a little bit of drought, but there really isn't a tomato variety or a pepper. Well, peppers are pretty open-minded, but they need water. And because there was a nationwide drought, of course, they're going to brag on this one and that one being drought-tolerant, but they really aren't.
No more so than the heritage would be.
No. Disease resistance is another thing, because a lot of the hybrids, if you really have a disease problem in your tomatoes, you're going to want to have a disease-resistant variety. But there are heirloom tomatoes that are disease-resistant. And each tomato, they usually list the diseases that they're resistant to. So you can look and you know, if you've got verticillium wilt, you could just look for the VT, that's verticillium. So, but as far as drought tolerant, nah, I don't buy it.
Okay. Well, good to know, because I was, well, you know, first of all, I'm very hesitant to buy anything that says hybrid, you know, because when the word hybrid comes up there, although some hybrids can. You can use the seeds over and over again. Most of them have been genetically altered. They're genetically altered hybrids, and so they're sterile. They don't. You can't reproduce them afterwards.
Whoa! Stop!
Yeah.
Screech! No, wrong. that's an old wives' tale. Sorry.
Really?
I'm deadly set against any genetically altered vegetables, foods of any kind. But hybrids are simply a cross between two different varieties of whatever, tomato, pepper. They're not genetically modified, and they're not sterile. Hybrids.
No. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hybrids will go ahead. I can save and plant hybrid tomato seeds, and they'll make a tomato. They'll produce tomatoes, but the tomato plant and the fruit is not necessarily going to look like the parent. You know, maybe it was a pear tomato or something, and what you get may be a beefsteak tomato, or this one might be a beefsteak and that one might be a cherry tomato. And you know, you don't know what you're getting, but you will get tomatoes.
And I agree with that. I guess maybe I misspoke. Not, I understand that not all hybrid blends are sterile and everything else. But if you go to, you know, if when we did our packs last year, if we took 10 packs out of Walmart, and out of the 10 hybrid packs, almost 50% of them that said hybrid, we found out later, were genetically altered, and they didn't reproduce. So, I mean, I guess my point is that a lot of the companies will put hybrid on there, but they won't tell you how the hybrid was created.
No, hybrid is not genetically modified. They just aren't. It's a cross. Hybrid means cross between two varieties. You know, it's like if you have a Labrador Retriever and breed it to a Collie, and those puppies are hybrids. If you breed a wolf to a Husky, it's going to be a hybrid puppy. But it's not. Genetically altered is injecting genes from a different species. You made they crossed firefly genes with soybeans. They crossed frog genes with corn. You know, that's genetically modified. Crossing corn with corn.
Is that when you pop it hops further?
That's right. Or your corn sings to you while you walk through it.
There you go. That'll work too.
But, you know, soy, in this country, the most commonly genetically altered foods are soybeans and corn. They're working on salmon now. That's the newest rage, is genetically modified salmon.
So, okay, so.
But you could take, I've done it myself. There was one of my favorite longtime varieties of tomatoes that was a hybrid. It was called Early Cascade. And it was produced by the Seminis Company. And they sold out to Monsanto, and they dumped it. And I had a pack of seeds, and I saved them, and I grew them, and I saved seeds from them. And over the years, I bred it back to open pollinated, which means now I can plant my seeds, and it'll come with the same type of tomato every time.
Nice. That is awesome.
When I started out, I'd have some that were potato leaf, some that were big, some that were little, some that were in a cluster, some that had a tip on them, and I just would not save seeds from any of those off kinds. And it took several years, but now I'm back down to open pollinated. They've done that with True Gold sweet corn. They bred it back from hybrids. And now it's an open pollinated variety that you can save seeds, and every year those plants and the corn will be exactly the same as the parents.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. That'd be cool.
Yeah. It is. It's fun. I'm not a rocket scientist, but, you know, what the heck. We do a lot of strange things around here. But I leave the fireflies and the frogs alone.
I wonder if I can get a banana and an orange together, because I like both of those, but I just hate peeling both of them individually. That would be great if I could just peel one.
I'm sure Monsanto's working on that.
Yeah, I'm sure too. But so let's go back to the planting. So we you do recommend going ahead and doing your starters. Yo, is it too early to start doing it now?
It depends on where you live. In the north, definitely way too early. I'm about as far cold as you're going to get. And we also, but we plant early. We've got a hoop house, and I also use walls of water to protect my tomato plants. So we set them out in the beginning of May, where a lot of northern gardeners can't set out unprotected plants until June, because of the frost.
I'm sorry, did you say walls of water?
I was going to come back to that, too. I was wondering what a wall of water was.
Walls of water are they're a light plastic sleeve. They've got individual sleeves that contain water. They're about 18 inches high, about the size of a 5-gallon bucket. And you fill them with water. You put them over your tomato plant in the garden, fill each cell with water, and then pull out your 5-gallon bucket that you use to kind of hold them in place while you're filling them. And
okay.
Then you just kind of tip in a little bit, make a teepee over the tomato, and it's like its own individually water-heated greenhouse.
Yeah, I see that now. Okay. Interesting. So
and
you have those?
I have, yes, hundreds of them. And
wow.
I can set my tomatoes out at least a month ahead of time. And when you're in a 90-day frost-free growing season area, every month, every week you can get that you don't have freezing weather really helps.
Well, yeah, I agree. One of the questions I had is, do you use this just for tomatoes, or do you use it for other plants as well?
To tell you the truth, I've had the very best luck with the tomatoes. I've used it on peppers, but my peppers tend to get leggy on me. We put our peppers in a hoop house, and that does much better for us. It's just an unheated hoop house made out of PVC pipe and 6-mil plastic. And we've got three of them now, and we use one for watermelons, one for muskmelons, and one for peppers.
Where did you get your plastic?
We've just gotten it at our local farm store.
Okay.
And so if they freeze, the plants are still okay because the water freezes, but it creates basically an insulator around the plant?
Yeah, it does. I've had 16 degrees and a foot of snow on my tomato plants, for a couple days, and I went outside and I went, well, I know I got black little sticks inside of there, and I kind of went out and looked in there, and I went, holy cow, not only were they alive, but they'd grown about 2 inches.
Wow, that is really cool.
That's all what right, I said.
I'm sold.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Yeah, that's Wall of Water. Are you at the same page? The same page there, Bubba? Wallofwater.com.
No, I haven't looked them up yet. I was just going off of what she's saying.
Wall of Water. That's WALL-O-Water.com. Wallofwater.com.
Wallow. Okay.
Wallofwater.com. That is an awesome product. I'm totally ordering.
Yeah, they really are. And I've not paid by Wall of Water Company or anything, but. I use them in another thing. They're plastic, so you think, oh yeah, sure, they're going to work a year and then they'll, you know, be no good. I've got some that are as old as my youngest son. He's 23.
Oh wow, nice.
So
nice.
They do, and I'm terribly abusive of them. You know, I pull them off the plants, and sometimes I don't gather them up for a month or so, and they blow across the garden. I'm horrible. So you know, if you took better care of them, I'm sure they'd last even longer.
Huh.
Sweet.
Well, now this is something new I'm going to have to try.
There you go.
Are they expensive?
The best price I found is Jung's, and they've got them for a little over $3 a piece if you get six. You've got to shop around. I've noticed that not only with Walls of Water, but the shipping rate on some companies is horrendous this year, and the same exact product will vary tremendously, so shop around a little bit.
Oh, I finally found them. Okay, well, Amazon's got a 3-pack for $9. So
there you go.
Would you consider that expensive?
No, that's a good price.
How much is the shipping?
$3.
Well, you'll save a lot if you buy more than one pack, then I'm sure that your shipping would be better.
Yeah, I'm not sure how Amazon does it, but yeah, that probably makes sense. All right, well, that's interesting. So, you know, you're saying you can start your
and that's something you can buy ahead of time, as you know, like Walls of Water, plastic for hoop houses, things like that. You can have all in place. You know, some PVC if you want to throw some little hoops up. You know, there's a million things you can do. Sit down with a notebook and plan out your garden. Plan what varieties you want to grow. With the food shortage coming up this year, think of what things cost the most now because they're going to go higher already, and plan on planning more of those.
That's a good point. You know, figure out what's the most expensive and start with that.
Yeah. And, you know, some areas you can, you know, like salad ingredients are starting to get really high. And you can throw up just a little 4x4 area, and you can have all the salad greens that you want. You know, some green onions and some lettuce. You can cut it, and it'll come again and do that until the weather gets hot.
Nice. Now, let me ask you this. It's a good thing that you brought that up, because we're already seeing it. I mean, every single day, I look and I see 20, 30 ads out here of people getting rid of livestock, and specifically calling out in the ads that they can't afford the grass or feed for them because the prices have gotten too high. You know,
the prices have gotten so high because of the drought,
right?
And the cost of fuel, you know, farm fuel is horrendous.
Yeah, and on top of that, the corn fuel prices, at least in our area, because most of the corn, a lot of the corn is going to ethanol, so the food price, the corn prices for feed has just been through the roof.
Yes, I know.
It's been ridiculous. So let me ask you this. Like you have goats, correct?
Yes.
And livestock. Is there anything that I can do to hedge against that? You know, we're going to get a couple of milking goats this season. You know, we had a couple of goats, and we want to go ahead and get some goats to milk because milk prices are supposed to go through the roof this coming season again because of feed prices and just, you know, overall food prices. And we go through a lot of milk, so we decided we're going to go ahead and just get a couple milking goats. And but then the more I think about it, it's like, is there something that I can plant that's fast-growing that I can start getting ready for that could be a good hedge against those really high prices of feed?
It all depends on how much land you have that is tillable. You know, if you've got enough land, if you could put a patch of 100 feet by 100 feet into some alfalfa hay that you could put water on to irrigate it, you could go out there and cut it with a weed eater or a scythe and have all the hay your goats will need, you know, because alfalfa, you can usually get at least two cuttings and usually three or more, and you can just let it dry and then rake it and put it in under a shelter and not have to buy hay that's expensive. We feed our goats and our chickens a lot of things from the garden. Like when we harvest our sweet corn while the stalks are still green, we cut them with a machete and take them to our goats, and they eat that instead of hay. They like it better. It's better for them. Weeds from the garden we use for feed. We give them, you know, when I thin carrots, if there's misshapen ones or whatever, the goats get them. You know, it's an ongoing process rather than planting certain crops for them. We do plant extra rutabagas and turnips and, you know, root crops for squash. We plant extra squash for them. This year we were able to contact a market grower that grew acres and acres of pumpkins. And after he had all his perfect pumpkins picked out and piled up, we were able to buy truckloads of pumpkins for $10 a load. And we stored those in the barn, and we fed them to our cattle and our pigs instead of that expensive grain.
Oh, that's smart. That's smart.
That's actually a really good idea.
Okay. I know in Europe, you know, people have a cow, they have a couple goats, and the man or the woman will take a little cart out and a scythe and go along the roadside and cut grass every day, just a little bit, bring it home and dry it and put it up. You know, and we can do some of that. I've done that for my horses, you know, just go along the roadside and just, you don't want to do it where there's heavy traffic and lots of dust, you know, fumes and stuff. But, you know, on some quiet country road, maybe there's nice grass growing. A lot of places there's even alfalfa or clover growing on the roadside.
Well,
you know, you can harvest that.
I have a couple of neighbors that don't mow their lawn on a regular basis, so I could always, go stake them over there.
yeah, there you go.
Hey,
your neighbor's rose garden.
Yeah, exactly.
Jackie, we just got an email here, and somebody asking a question, so I wanted to ask you. They said that, well, let me just read it, because I'm going to massacre it. Sometimes my pickles are soft. How do I avoid that?
How do you avoid soft pickles? Don't cook them so long.
Okay.
the main thing with pickles is put them up when they're very fresh. Go out in the garden in the morning when there's, you know, when it's cool yet, pick your cucumbers, bring them in the house, and immediately get them ready to can. A lot of pickles get soft because people pick them and sit them in a basket for a day or two and then get around to pickling them. Or they buy them at a farmer's market and then bring them home, and a couple days later they pickle them. Make sure you cut off the blossom end on every one, because the blossom end can harbor fungus, and that sometimes makes your pickle soft.
Okay.
Pick a recipe that does not boil the cucumbers too long. Think about it. Cucumbers are a salad ingredient, and you would not want to bake a cucumber. You would not want to boil a cucumber. So the longer you boil them, the softer they're going to be.
Okay.
Some of the old timers didn't even water bath the pickles. And, you know, the less time that you have to water bath a pickle or put boiling syrup on it, the better. You don't want to have something where you bring the pickles to a boil and then you boil them for 15 minutes and then you do this and then you do that and then you water bath them for 15 minutes because you're going to have soft pickles no matter what.
Gotcha. All right, well, there you go. Hopefully you heard that. The person that emailed me, so I hope they understood that one. But, yeah, that's interesting because I believe my wife has had that challenge in the past with soft pickles.
Well, in the old days, they did not water bath the pickles. And my grandmother didn't do it. My mother didn't do it. And then all of a sudden, to keep us safer from ourselves, they decided that we needed to water bath our pickles. And what they did in the old days was to put the boiling syrup over the cold pickles in the jars and then immediately put on the lids and they'd seal. But now to keep us safer from ourselves, they decided that we need to water bath our pickles. So now in all the books it says water bath your pickles.
That's funny. Okay, so Jackie, I hate to cut you off, but we got to get ready to go here. Can you give out of your own bag of tricks here before we head out? Can you give everybody tip or trick that you use every single season that they can take away today to help them get prepared for spring?
That's no fair. To get the most out of your garden, consider using some row covers, hoop houses, walls of water to extend your season or to protect your plants from wind and dryness. Even if you live like in New Mexico where it is got a pretty long season, there's still a lot of wind, and the wind is hard on plants. So consider using a little plastic over them, and you'll get a higher harvest. We used to only get enough green peppers and chilies to just make a few little recipes to can, and with the hoop houses, now we're getting bushels on the same amount of ground.
Nice.
Wow, that's cool.
So consider using a little bit of row cover or hoop houses. Not expensive. You don't need to go to a lot of trouble, a lot of expense, whatever you could do.
Okay. Well, Jackie, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today. It's always a pleasure. And,
it's always fun.
And I hope you make it through this next storm unscathed.
Yeah, we'll always make it through.
All right. Nice. And hopefully we'll talk to you again here real soon. We really appreciate you coming on.
Anytime, guys.
Take care, Jackie.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys, we were just talking to Jackie Clay. She is a contributing author to Backwoods Home Magazine. We're going to take a quick commercial break here. And when we come back, we're going to knock out Homestead Hunters. And then that'll be it. And we got to get ready for our next show. So let's go ahead and take a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back and do Homestead Hunters.
Awesome.
Hi, this is Jay Steven Stoller for Backwoods Home Magazine. If you like the program you're listening to right now, consider subscribing to Backwoods Home Magazine. Call 1-800-835-2418 or go to www.backwoodshome.com and click on the subscribe button. Every issue of Backwoods Home Magazine is over 100 pages, packed with solid self-reliance advice by experts who tell you how to survive in these unpredictable times. Call 1-800-835-2418. 2418.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker.
Mr. Edible Underwear Maker.
Your true genius combined two of man's favorite things, panties and food.
I can taste it now.
They're a snack. They're underwear. They're a snack and underwear. Brilliant.
Two treats in one.
Gorgeous Grape, Rock My World Raspberry, Bodacious Banana. And nothing says, I want you, like a man with a mouthful of underpants.
I want you, baby.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker. Because thanks to you, when it comes to panties, extra large means extra yummy.
Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, we are back with Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci. I love talking to Jackie Colorado.
Oh, she's awesome. She is awesome. I like her.
Yeah, it's always a great experience. She's always got lots of information. So I think we should jump into Homestead Hunters here real quick.
Okay.
And let's knock this one out. So as always, folks, you can find the link to Homestead Hunters at Colorado Ron's page, which is www.facebook.com/ColoradoRon page. Colorado Ron page. And tell us about where we are today.
This one is in okay, for everybody listening, this is a little rub for Bubba because he misses Texas just a little bit. And so being that it was winter and he was telling me about the storms up there, I decided to look in Texas again. And this one is in Linden, Texas. I really actually I was looking at this one while we were talking with Jackie, and the more I look at it, the more I like it. This one is in, again, Linden, Texas, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 3,200 square foot, and it is on just shy of 5 acres. So this is really actually a perfect little spot.
That's a nice-sized piece of property.
Yeah. And what I like about this one is obviously the room. It's got a large game room. It's got a huge den area. And so, with 5 acres, Linden's a good location. It's not too far out in the middle of nowhere. And so, yeah, I'm really liking this one. What do you think?
Well, the thing I like most about it, Colorado, is that if you actually look at the surrounding property, it's pretty much surrounded by woods.
Yep. I like it.
I mean, now it's the weird thing is it's between two highways, 125 and 8, but it's still tucked in back far enough that it's and these aren't major highways, guys. These are kind of small interstate highways. 125 is actually, I think, Main Street that goes into town, and it's surrounded by this entire area of woods. Kind of the freaky thing about it is it's also the the property backs up to the cemetery. So I mean, you don't have to ever worry about anybody moving in, well, anybody living moving in next to you. But
good point.
But that's going to keep that. I mean, that's got to be 15-20 acres that the cemetery has, so that's a lot of land. And typically people don't build directly around the cemetery. So you're going to be in an area that has a lot of space that's never going to be touched.
Yeah. And this is East Texas for those that aren't familiar with the area. So a lot more wooded areas around.
Yeah. It's they're not the trees are a little bit different. Now, the thing about East Texas is it is a little bit more humid. The nice thing about it you will find, though, is you're probably going to have more groundwater over there. This is about, Linden's what, about an hour 20 minutes, hour and 30 minutes east of...
That sounds about right.
Dallas? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's you're about 30, 40 minutes, I believe, south, maybe not due south, but south of Texarkana.
Yeah.
Which I love Texarkana, and you're equally about an hour west of Shreveport. And let me tell you, it's a great area because you're so close to the Louisiana border. You can jump across to Shreveport or to El Dorado or Bastrop or any of those places, and there is tons of fishing, tons of food, tons of back road places to just stop everywhere around there. It's an awesome area.
Oh, I love that area. So it's, again, it's a hunter's paradise, really. I mean, the hunting and fishing is pretty, and then what's that lake up there in the right lake or something like that. I can't remember. I have to look at the map again. But there's a pretty good sized lake just between Linden and Texarkana.
I'm not really that familiar with the lakes around. I know that
here it is, Wright Patman. It's a pretty good sized lake.
Okay.
It's bigger than Texarkana.
Oh, well, there you go. That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a ton of lakes up there. There's a lake that I used to go catfishing at called Lake of the Pines. That is about an hour west of Shreveport. And you catch some just massive, massive blues out there. And great place to go fishing. We used to go into Linden to go eat because it's a great place to go ahead and stop. So I like this property. It's got tons of trees on it. I think this is a good find call. And for $84,000 for 5 acres, that's a steal.
That's a steal, I think. You know, I'm sure you can offer him $80,000. Let's see, it's been on, where do you find that? How long it's been on the market? Anyway, you can go to the link on Zillow and it'll tell you 4 months. So I'm sure you can offer $75,000-$80,000 and probably pick this one up.
Yeah. Now know that it is a little bit, like I said, it's a little bit of drive. It's about an hour and 20 minutes from Dallas. So if you're looking at a commute, it's probably not the best commute to go back and forth. I mean, it's actually better to go west and commute in than east and go in.
Yeah, it's probably better to go to Shreveport.
But as far as if you work from home or you're looking for a getaway property and everything else, this is a great area. This is Colorado said it a couple times, and I would agree. It's a hunter and fisher. It's an outdoorsman's paradise.
Yep, I agree.
Now, the other thing that was nice about this property I saw is it definitely is set up like a East Texas home. Massive porch.
Yes.
Massive outside porch.
Big, big front porch. I love that.
And again, we talked about this before. These old houses that were built in the 50s or before always had really tall ceilings, and this place is no exception. They're really big rooms, lots of windows throughout the whole place with really big ceilings. And I like that because, you know, when it's not when the humidity is not at 100%, there's some gorgeous, wonderful breezes that goes through that area.
Absolutely. And it's no small house either, 3,200 square foot. So
yeah, that's a big house, and it's a single level.
Yeah, it looks like it has an addition. Is what that is the reason why? If you look at it, you can kind of see the original house, and then it looks like they added on. I could be wrong, but that looks like an addition.
Oh no, you're right. You're right. There's an addition. I see it. Okay. Yeah. Well, I wonder what that addition is then, because it's only 3 bedrooms.
I know. I saw that too. But you know, it's got a den, a game room, open kitchen, dining room, and then it looks like a 2-car garage. The first story. Oh, first story. So that addition has a second story. That's right. You can see the second story on that one. So the first story has 2 bedrooms, bath, den, kitchen, dining. Let's see. This property is great for a large family, with plenty of acreage for horses, livestock, and a garden. There you go.
Yeah. My guess is that they had to do the addition just for all the animals' heads that the guy was going to hang inside them.
Yeah, there you go. Totally.
All right. Well, good find, Colorado. I think this is a good one. So if you guys go to Colorado Ron Page on Facebook and check this out, it's the property's in Linden, Texas. It's 84.9 and 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 3,200 square feet on 5 acres of property. That's a really good deal.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's a smoking deal.
All right. Okay, Colorado, we should go ahead and get this wrapped up. And now next week, people are going to find this very, very odd. Next week, we will be talking to some gentlemen from a competitive expo.
Yes, sir.
Now, people are going to go, huh, really? We have some friends that they're putting on. I think it's their first event, if that's correct. It's called Prepare to Endure, And that's going to be out in Bakersfield, California in June. And we are going to be talking to Brian and Darren. They're the owners of the expo. And kind of find out about how they got involved in it and what they're going to be doing and everything else. And then additionally, we're going to be talking, I believe, to Cade Courtley. And Cade is going to be their keynote speaker. And he's a former Navy SEAL and host of Spike TV's Surviving Disasters.
Yep.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm very interested to hear what he has to say.
All right. So, guys, I guess that's it for us this week. And next week we'll be back with you talking with the guys from Prepare to Endure and hopefully Cade.
Awesome. Let's do it.
All right, guys. Take care, and as always, keep prepping, and we will talk to you guys next week. Talk to you later, Colorado.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We're from North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.